Welcome to Get Your Spirit in Shape, United Methodist Communications and UMC.org's podcast to help keep our souls as healthy as our bodies. I'm Joe Iovino. In this episode, we get to meet Bishop Reuben Sines Jr. of the Great Plains Annual Conference, serving United Methodist churches in Kansas and Nebraska. In our conversation, Bishop Sines talks about the early days of his life in the church.
Growing up as an Hispanic and Protestant was a unique experience, so community and spiritual formation became important.
About a surprising call to ministry.
To make a long story short, within 90 days, we had sold our business, our home, moved to Dallas, and I was sitting in Billy Abraham's The Philosophy of Theology class and wondering, how in the world did I get here?
And how his daily exercise routine influences how he thinks about his devotional life.
As soon as I find that I'm getting stagnant, I say, okay, what do I need to do now to shock my spiritual system again to make it stay alive and vibrant?
I think you'll enjoy meeting Bishop Sines. Bishop Sines, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
So I want to begin asking you about your early life of faith. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Rio Grande City, Texas. It's a border community in deep South Texas by the tip of Texas, right across the border from Mexico, actually.
Was church part of your family's Sunday routine, or did you start attending church later in life?
No, it was part of our Sunday routine. Dad and Mom, when they got married, they looked for a church. They visited a Methodist church. My mom was third-generation Methodist. And when they went to church, the pastor paid them a visit, and they decided that First United Methodist Church was going to be their home church. And the week after that, Dad started teaching a Sunday school that he still continues to teach to this day. So he's been at it for 60 years.
Wow.
But yeah, we've been lifelong members of First United Methodist Church in Rio Grande City.
And what are some of your early memories of growing up in that congregation?
Definitely sitting with my folks in the pews on Sunday and, going through the whole worship service. Sunday school, definitely. Yeah. I remember highly committed Sunday school teachers that were passionate about teaching the Bible stories, vacation Bible school, Christmas dramas that we participated in. And just the community life of the church. There was always a sense of fellowship that strengthened us, you know. And it was, I talked with this about many people, that growing up as an Hispanic and Protestant was a unique experience, because 95% of my classmates or the community was, had a Roman Catholic affiliation. So, So community and spiritual formation became important to give us a sense of identity, and also, just to help us connect with a broader community. So,
is there a specific Sunday school teacher or youth leader or somebody in there that was especially influential for you?
Well, I'd say my mom.
Okay.
I think she had the task of being my Sunday school teacher several years. And of course, I remember Adelita Gutierrez and Nifita Lopez. I mean, these women, I think they carried a Bible that was half the size of their bodies. But, they loved the Word, and it was underlined and scribbled on the margins, and so they just loved to teach the Bible to children. And so I remember those, and of course Dora Wagner and so many others who poured into our lives. I think most of the time they thought we weren't paying attention, but some of the stuff stuck, I guess.
Yeah. I noticed in your biography online that you were a high school teacher out of college. What did you teach?
I taught high school. I started teaching history and mathematics, and then I moved into the special ed department. So I would work with emotionally disturbed high school students. These were students that came out of disadvantaged families and neighborhoods, and so I did that for 6 years, and also coached sports, especially football and strength training.
Were you a football player in high school?
In high school and college.
Oh, wow. Okay. Where did you go to college?
Stephen F. Austin. It's a school 150 miles north of Houston, and so I went on a football scholarship, so I played there for 4 years.
Wow, fantastic. And then I also read, after teaching, you and your wife had a small business.
We were looking for some additional income, and one thing led to another, so we started with a small inventory out of a briefcase, and then it grew, and we opened our first store, and I needed to pay more attention to the business rather than doing it on a part-time. So eventually I stopped coaching to get to the business after school, and then a couple years later I stopped teaching so that I could attend to the business full-time.
Wow.
As it grew and our customer base grew as well. So,
and then at some point you were called into ministry.
The call to ministry happened 5 or 6 years probably before I responded to it. But when I finally did respond to it, I you know, my wife and I had a full-fledged business. Things were going, and it was just an encounter that I had one evening. To make a long story short, within 90 days, we had sold our business, our home, moved to Dallas, and I was sitting in Billy Abraham's The Philosophy of Theology class and wondering, how in the world did I get here from there? And so, yeah, it was quite the event. Things happened in that short span of time that I'm still having a hard time explaining.
That must have been a powerful experience to have your life altered so drastically in 90 days.
Yeah, powerful is an understatement.
What was that? What was that like?
I don't know how much time we have on the podcast.
Okay,
but there's just so many things that happened. Do you want me to talk about anything in particular, Joe?
Well, how did you know God was calling you to ministry? Was there? It sounds like there maybe was an event or something that specific that happened, or was it a long chain of things happening?
It was a long chain of things. I mean, one time we had a preacher at our church, and sometimes preachers say things and they move on with their life, but what they say kind of lingers in your soul, and the Spirit starts working in you. And so this particular preacher said, we're all proud when, as parents, when we say that our children are professionals or they're in some kind of vocational work that is high level, basically white collar, and he mentioned several of them. But how many parents are proud if their children become pastors? And of course, I was in my middle 20s, and that kind of, for somebody that's in your midlife, in your early 20s, you've got so many dreams of aspiring for success, and however you define that, and so that kind of knocked me off balance. And then at an annual conference, there was another moment about 3 years before I answered the call where one of our beloved pastors passed away, and there was kind of a pall of sorrow over the whole conference. And another pastor said, the fields are ripe for the harvest, but the laborers are few. And I was a lay delegate to annual conference, and I experienced a pull to answer the call to ministry then. But three years later, when I was involved in my work, then I had another encounter, and it's just, I said, that's it. And there was a very continuous series of events, from people confirming it to us selling our house without a real estate agent in 2 weeks, which is a large house.
Wow.
Selling our business, and just, that's a whole chapter.
Wow. Yeah. I know sometimes we tell those stories and it sounds instantaneous, but really there's always a lot of, it seems there's usually a lot of groundwork that was happening for years before.
And it all started in Sunday school.
Oh.
With those stories from Adelita Gutierrez and Ninfa Lopez and my mom and Christmas dramas. It all starts then. Yep. I mean, the grace of God is continually working on us, and so in ways that we understand and don't understand.
Yeah,
so,
and long before we know it.
Long before we know it.
Yeah. Shifting gears a little bit, what kind of things do you do to relax? What do you do just for the fun of it?
I don't know if you'd call it relaxing or not, but I have a habit of exercising every day.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of stressful, but it helps me relax during the rest of the day.
Yeah.
So normally my day starts around 4 to 5 o'clock in the morning. I'll get up and get myself awake by drinking a little bit of coffee and doing my devotional and then exercising. And so that kind of gets my day on the right track. Of course, I enjoy spending time with my wife, Maya. Mm-hmm. We've been married now for 36 years, and we enjoy just kind of going out to the movies if there's a good movie on, or going out to eat. We spend a lot of time on the road now, driving all over the place, so I enjoy that. And, of course, spending time with my children and now my new grandchildren. So that's a new season or chapter of my life, so I'm enjoying that as well.
How old are your grandchildren?
Well, our oldest son just adopted a group of siblings, and they are 12, 10, 8, and 5. So,
wow.
So that's our latest addition, and we're super excited.
Yeah.
Wonderful children. And so we're happy for them, and we're happy for our new grandchildren. Then we have another grandchild who was born last November. He's 10 months now. And then we have one that we're expecting in December and another one in May. So within the course of 2 years, we've had seven new grandchildren.
Yeah, that new season has rushed in on you.
Yeah. So I'm learning what all that means. And, you know, I thought that I had finally surfaced when the priority list for my wife, but now with all the grandchildren,
right.
I'm back down, to the bottom of the pole here again. So, but it's okay.
Understood. Well, I was talking to your assistant one day, and she said that you do not have many decorations in your office. Is there is there a reason for that?
Well, you know, I don't have much. Okay, so I'm artistic and that I create and stuff like that, but I'm just not into decoration. I think it makes them more nervous than me.
Oh.
I do have like 6 books on my bookshelf and a whiteboard. But I have most of my books at home.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do my best work early in the morning from 5 in the morning to 11 or 12, and it's uninterrupted, and so much of this work is a lot of think work and a lot of planning and discerning and understanding information. And so when I get to the office, it's more about conversations and meetings and things like that. So,
yeah.
Of course, I'll put out my responses, but as far as studying, this is not the best place to study or to work on sermons or things like
okay.
that. So all my resources are at home.
Okay.
So it's pretty stark.
Yeah.
Well, right now, actually, I've got around 50 flood buckets. So I think
wow.
the conference decided that they could have, make use of my office.
Yeah.
So we picked up over 5,000 flood buckets for the victims of Hurricane Harvey and Irma, and now for Puerto Rico. And so our conference offices were full to the, for wall-to-wall flood buckets, and they ran out of room, so they decided to use my office since I wasn't using it for anything else. So I'm looking at flood buckets now.
That's a great use of the space.
It's great use of the space. It's missional. It's a missional space.
Mm-hmm. I know being a bishop is a very busy job, and it's a very difficult job, but is there something like really fun about it or good about it that maybe we wouldn't think of right away?
You get to see the church at its best in many ways, and you see lay people and clergy that are passionate about Jesus Christ, passionate about the United Methodist Church, and passionate about their local churches, doing some amazing work. I tell folks, I said, the quality and the caliber of people that we have in our congregations and in our pews are just second to none. I mean, these persons, They run corporations, school systems, healthcare systems, military branches. I mean, they're involved in the judicial systems and government, city politics. I mean, these folks are high capacity, high caliber. They know so many people. They have so many connections. I don't think there's anything that the church cannot do if it wanted to, simply by harnessing all the gifts and graces of our lay people. So I've seen some of our churches, both from the smallest church that we have in towns with 5 or 6, homes,
mm-hmm.
All the way to Church of the Resurrection that's got 20 or 30,000 members. They're doing amazing things and good work. And so when I see that, I get to see it from the 30,000-foot view. It's just inspiring. And so, I just try to encourage that and help provide the place and the ecology for that to flourish more and more and more. So,
I love that. So I asked you earlier what you did for fun. What do you do to feed your soul? What do you do for your spiritual life and to stay in touch with the Spirit?
I like to follow structured
mm-hmm.
pathways. So I've used Macrina Whitaker's Song of the Seed. That was a resource that a good friend of mine gave to me about 20 years ago. And it's got 3 10-day retreats, and so it's about listening, using Lectio Divina, and then reflecting internally on what this means. I've also used the Ignatian Adventure, which is Ignatian spirituality. And in my research, I understand that Wesley drew heavily from Ignatian spirituality when it came to Wesley's understanding of social holiness and the role of the Christian in society. And so, of course, Ignatius is established the Order of the Jesuits. And so I read those devotionals that go through the whole, I guess, the whole doctrinal trajectory from God and to Jesus and the work of the Spirit, but especially as it focuses on the way of the cross. And so I've kind of been a devotee of the way of the cross in seminary. I found out about it, and I've been practicing that. Sometimes not only during Lent, but throughout the rest of the year. And the cross, and you know, was central to Paul's theology. And so I don't claim to know all that there is about the cross and the implications for it. Mm-hmm. It's a mystery, and at the same time, it's a profound subject. And so I'm probably now just at the very outskirts of of its depth, but that takes me to different places, you know, personally, and also understanding what my role as a disciple of Jesus Christ is in the world. So,
can you tell me again what the name of that it was a devotional?
It's called the Ignatian Adventure, and the other one is Macrina Whitaker's Song of the Seed. But you know, I use Phyllis Tickle's Divine Hours for springtime and for the fall, which gives me a very structured way of approaching the day. I like to use those for Advent also, or just sometimes when I don't like routines because I get stuck in ruts. And so when I start getting bored or that, you know, my devotional resource is not getting me what I'm needing, then I'll move, you know, to something else. I've also used Job's material and others. So I'm kind of and eclectic when it comes to spirituality. Yeah. And it has to, it's just like a workout routine. If you do the same workout every day, 7 days a week, eventually you're going to get stagnant. And so you got to change the routine to shock the body again. And so I take that same principle to my spirituality. And so as soon as I find that I'm getting stagnant, I say, okay, what do I need to do now to shock my spiritual system again to make it stay alive and vibrant?
Oh, I like that image a lot, because so often we just want to keep doing the same thing because we think, oh, I got to do it another day. But to find that newness and shock the system, I like that image a lot.
And of course, worship and the corporate disciplines, you know, and being with Christ's body. Of course, it's different now because I don't per se have a congregation that I attend every Sunday. But, you know, so I'm preaching, you know, many Sundays and traveling around. But you know, to be with God's people like this past Sunday, I was at a place and the choir was singing and they had a trumpet ensemble and bell. You know, sometimes you go and you listen to excellent music and it sounds more like a performance. And I told the choir, I said, you know, all that you're singing sound like you really believe it. And there's a difference because the congregation was transcended to a different realm. I mean, it was really, really worship, and it was extremely, extremely well done. And so, you know, so just to be with God's people in that place and allow the Spirit to have its way with us, I mean, that's also another way that I keep myself connected not only to God, but also to God's people.
I have so enjoyed meeting you today. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Thank you, Joe, for what you do. God bless to everyone that's listening there. You are the church, and we are more with you. Thank you for using your gifts and your graces and for helping others to love God, to proclaim Christ, to serve others, especially the poor, and do justice for the most vulnerable in our communities. God bless you all.
Oh, thank you, Bishop.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Joe.
That was Bishop Sines of the Great Plains Annual Conference, made up of United Methodist Churches in Kansas and Nebraska. Meet more of our bishops, download other Get Your Spirit in Shape episodes, and find other United Methodist podcasts by going to umc.org/podcasts. We've put links for some of the books Bishop Sines recommended on the page for this episode. Also, I would appreciate if you would take a moment to review Get Your Spirit in Shape on iTunes or wherever you download our podcast. More reviews help more people find us. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back soon with another conversation to help keep our souls as healthy as our bodies. I'm Joe Iovino. Peace.